Thank you for standing by, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's webinar. We have with us Mr. Nicholas Bornozis, President of Capital Link, organizer of the event. I must advise you the conference is being recorded today, and we now pass the floor to Mr. Bornozis. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, and good morning to everyone. Welcome to Capital Link's webinar series, and I'm Nicholas Bornozis, President of Capital Link. Today, we have a roundtable discussion on the product anchor sector. We're delighted to have with us our feature panelists, Kim Ullman, the CEO of Concordia Maritime, Marco Fiori, the CEO of D'Amico International Shipping, and Eddie Valentis, the CEO of Pyxis Tankers. The moderator for today will be James Zhang, Senior Analyst of Industrials and Maritime Practice at Maxim Group, LLC. This event is accessible through a live audio webcast, and then it will also be available as an audio archive through www.capitallinkwebinars.com. Please note that after the panel discussion, there will be a Q&A session. Webinar participants can submit questions during the webinar through a special button on the event page. As you're looking on your screen on the upper right-hand side, there is a button titled Submit a Question. So if you click it, you can submit your question, or you can email your questions to us at questions@capitallinkwebinars.com. As I mentioned, you can submit a question anytime during the event. The discussion today is on the product tanker sector. It is sector-specific and not company-specific. The discussions and opinions expressed by the panelists are not intended as legal or investment advice or advice of any kind, as a matter of fact, and are provided for informational and educational purposes only, and Capital Link bears no responsibility for them. Furthermore, the panel discussion may contain forward-looking statements concerning future events. Ladies and gentlemen, Capital Link has made a strategic commitment to the industry, to the shipping industry, and in addition to our annual conference and weekly shipping newsletter, we hold industry webinars on a regular basis. To access our webinar library for past and upcoming webinars, please visit www.capitallinkwebinars.com. Thank you all for participating, and now I will turn the floor over to James so we can get started with the webinar. James, please go ahead.
Thank you, Nick. So before I begin, I just want to thank Capital Link for hosting this webinar and also thank our panelists for joining us today. As Nick mentioned, I'm James Zhang, Senior Analyst at Maxim Group. I believe this is an opportune time for the webinar, especially with what's happening in the markets today. So before I begin, industry rules require research analyst disclosure of investment banking and other material conflicts of interest in public appearances. For this reason, I'm required to disclose that our firm owns shares of Pyxis Tankers, and the firm is also underwriting a public securities offering for Pyxis Tankers. So the way we've tailored this webinar is into a series of topics which we believe are important to the product tanker sector currently. We'll have our panelists discuss and give their opinions, and we will follow up this panel discussion with the Q&A session. So to kick things off, I want to take a high-level view of the product tanker sector and ask Kim and Eddie, what do you feel we are currently in the product tanker sector, and what are some possible near-term catalysts which could help rates move higher?
Okay, you mentioned my name first. My name is Kim. I represent Concordia Maritime. Good morning, everybody, and thanks, Capital Link, for inviting me to this webinar. I think that we are in what I would call the start of the low, so to speak. We had a second half 2016 that was not very good. We had an okay Q1. We did at least over 14,000. But Q2 and Q3 looks exceptionally challenging, I have to say. There will always be small spikes, of course. And I also have to say that we're not really surprised that we see the market where it is right now. We think we kind of saw it coming already last summer when all the inventories were full and have warned for it, so to speak. So the reason why it's low of the low or start of the low, whatever you call it, is that the inventories are full, and with full inventories, you kind of kill all the arbitrage opportunities and things like that. And we still have ships that are, you know, flooding the market. We even have Suezmaxes picking up or surging up all CPP going to West Africa from Korea and things like that. So with the filled inventories, arbitrages die, ships are stuck in the same positions, and as soon as they've been fixed, they're open again. So that's how we see that. Near-term catalyst you're asking for? Well, we have refinery maintenance period is about to be over, which is going to get some energy into the product tanker market. We can hope for a hot summer and a hot driving season, you know, with congestions in ports and things like that, and maybe fewer deliveries or delays in delivery schemes, but that's more of a wish list. What we need to do is, on the medium to longer term, is to get rid of the inventory overhang, and I think that will take another 2 to 3 quarters at least. So we see the market coming up from sometime next year. So that's it for me for now.
Yeah. This is Eddie Valentis from Pyxis Tankers. Thank you very much for inviting me. I definitely agree with Kim. We think that, you know, the market, especially for the MRs, which we are focusing, we see the beginning of a cyclical improvement, especially from Q4 onwards. We're in for a choppy 2 quarters for the reasons that Kim described. For us, we're very positive for the market going forward. I mean, reasons like, you know, the projected demand growth for refined products is in the region of 2.5 to 3% annually. We see a modest ton-mile expansion from the changing refinery landscape. Well, yeah, definitely, we see the increasing U.S. exports and to areas, especially with no refining capacity or little refining capacity, such as South America and Africa. We see a record low order book and very little new orders going forward. And we also feel, especially for the MRs, we see an aging fleet, 13%, approximately 13% of the fleet is over 20 years of age. Of course, other factors such as lack of financing, either debt or equity, are also affecting and making it very difficult for supply to increase in the short term. Therefore, we see a very positive long-term outlook for the MR products, tankers. Additional catalysts that we feel that might kick in later might be the rise in oil prices, which could result in arbitrage opportunities and therefore increased trading. And, of course, the possibility of heavier scrapping, which might come for older tonnage, because new environmental regulation will kick in later in the year, the ballast water treatment system from September this year. And, of course, as you know, the big thing, which is the lower sulfur emissions, which is coming in 2020. So, therefore, these two catalysts might be a good opportunity for the market to recover.
Yeah, great. So, Eddie, you mentioned the ballast water treatment system. So, you know, we as analysts, we're always looking for some type of industry valve to support the supply-demand fundamentals. So can you kind of go into more detail on the effect of the ballast water treatment system on the product tanker sector and also the scrubbers in the future?
Thank you, James. I mean, definitely it's a major event for owners in general, not only for product tankers, but for owners in general, but for our sector and the MR sector. It's a major event considering that 13% of the fleet is above 20 years of age. So when the time comes for this installation, which is a substantial new investment for the vessel, a substantial capital injection, would the owners decide to go through with the investment, or rather scrap the vessels, which are in any case at the end of their life cycle. So we think it's a very interesting times ahead. We believe that most definitely many owners would decide not to go through with that investment, and especially regarding the sulfur regulation, which is coming in 2020. Of course, we have a long way until then, and we don't exactly know what the situation is, but definitely it's another major concern for vessels which are above 20 years of age.
So, you know, Kim and Marco, since you guys are also ship owners, we'd love to hear your thoughts on the older tonnage and what effect the regulations will have on the scrapping of those vessels.
Go ahead, Marco.
Hi, my name is Marco Fiori. I'm with D'Amico International Shipping. Thank you for inviting me, Nicholas. I think in general what's going to happen, I think the one thing that probably was not mentioned, I think, before as a catalyst, I think we have to continue seeing this kind of environment where there is low order numbers. I think if we all refrain ourselves from placing new orders, this is a very good start. So this also, I wanted to add also this comment. And that brings me also to the older tonnage. I think that today, there is a lot of, you can find some resales, some very good resales, but I think also where there is a hole in the market a little bit, where due to lack of liquidity for many reasons, banks being absent probably in the segment, it has been in the ships that are from 5 to 10 years old of age, especially the 7 to 10 years. You have some very good ships there. I think that if you want to make an investment, that's the segment where people should be looking to invest. So I think there is really no need to go out and order new buildings. I say this because if you look at the case of these 7 to 10 years old ships, they are definitely trading at a lower value from where they should be. And I think that the ships that still have a long life in front of them, they could be very well adapted for ballast water treatment system. And then also looking at the low sulfur, probably they would be very capable without putting scrubbers on board to use the low sulfur fuel on board. So I think there is an opportunity in that segment, and especially I think in the segment of the MRs. Another segment that I think is very interesting is the handy segment. Very old, aging fleet. Very few orders have been made of handies. In this case, you have to wonder if the handies are still going to be trading in the future in the areas where they've been trading so far. I think that for sure there's going to be areas where they're going to be replaced by MRs, but there's still some areas such as the Med, such as Northern Europe. I think these kind of areas are still going to be in need of handies. And it's a very interesting fleet profile. There's a much older fleet than the Mars, so you should see there more pressure on that fleet to renew itself. The bigger size, I'm not that much involved. We have some LRs coming, some LR1s. We don't have any LRs so far, so I'm not a very good expert on that. But I think also the bigger ships, they should be having some very good potential from the fact of the order book, the fact that they can trade dirty and clean. So I think also these segments should have a very, very positive outlook. And I totally agree with Kim and Eddie that I think that 17 will be a year of transition. We've always said that. I think there's going to be spikes, but the years where there's going to be really you feel the impact of growth of trades, of the trade volume, and especially lower deliveries, is going to be 18 and 19.
If you just want a few additional comments to me on the ballast water, not really very much to add, of course, but the combination of a low order book, plus the potential of higher scrapping volumes due to the ballast water treatment system's investment requirement is, of course, good. And if you have a slightly lower market or bad markets together with investment requirements, that normally triggers one way or another, scrapping or at least alternative usage for the ships. And I agree, it's more in the handy segment, which is an older fleet, than in the MR. And the only caveat I would put in there is that it's easy for us to say that, okay, everybody, you know, or whoever has ships at the age of 15 to 20, they are likely to scrap, but they might have a little bit of a challenge with their own book values at the time to decide to scrap against a high book value, if that's the case. So it's not an absolute given, but nothing is a given in tanker or in business in general. But the combination of a low order book plus this extra scrapping potential is certainly looking good on the supply side.
Great, thank you. One other question. I know Marco mentioned the outlook for the handy sizes looks a little better due to the order book. Can you guys kind of go into your thoughts on the larger LR1s and 2s? You know, I could turn this over to Eddie to start with.
We do not focus on this segment. I can only discuss about MRs. And we take a view on the MRs going forward. If you like my opinion on the MRs, definitely the workhorse of the industry. It's the most widely used vessel, broadest trading market of all the product tankers. Size-wise, they can call in any, almost in any port in the world, including smaller and shallower ports. And they're capable of carrying multiple cargoes, ranging from clean petroleum cargoes, easy chemicals, and also up to edible and vegetable oils. So considering what is going on in the world regarding the new geographical structure of seaborne product trades because of the new refinery capacity added, et cetera, we think that the vessel that will be benefited most in the industry will be in the product tanker industry will be the MR. As you know, the U.S. has become a substantial exporter of refined products in the past years, especially to South America and Africa. From 9 million tons in 2006, by 2016, this has grown to 63 million tons. So it's a substantial increase in exports, and most of this export is going into MR product tankers. Asset values are very attractive at this stage. I also agree with Marco and Kim. Asset values are very attractive. Owners should look at the second-hand market. The values currently are way below their 10-year average, at approximately 30% below their 10-year average. So it's a nice, attractive entry point for MRs.
Thanks, Andrew. Marco, Kim, do you have any thoughts on the LR sector?
No, as Marco. I said, we have six on delivery of LR1s. We believe when we went to order them that there's going to be a shift also. I believe with what Eddie was saying about the MRs, I think they're really still the workhorse of the business. The 1,500 MRs is the biggest fleet on the water. Not for any reason, just because they are, you can trade them everywhere. It's a worldwide ship, can go anywhere, can do any type of cargoes. The LR1s, I think that it potentially they could be benefiting if we start seeing a scaling up of the stems, and something that's been carried on MRs probably would be carried on LR1s. This ports will be adapting, and I think you have seen also in other segments of shipping that normally the market tends to trade on higher ships because the cost per ton carried on a bigger ship is always lower. So I think LR1s probably have also an edge there, and especially they have an edge because it starts to be a ship where you can also trade it dirty. So, you know, you have both markets. It's going to cost to bring it back clean, but it is a ship that has also that kind of flexibility.
Yeah, and I have not really anything to add there. We're not really in the LR 1 and 2 markets, so Marco would be the best to comment on that. And what's been said on the MR side, I certainly agree with, obviously, so I don't have to repeat all of that. One extra little point maybe on their loss side is that they seem to be exceptionally exposed, if you will, towards a NAFTA business, NAFTA transportation, and with long-haul NAFTA being totally under the weather for the last 12 months or so, the rates for LR1s and LR2s have actually been under the MR markets, even though they're bigger and more expensive. So the versatility on the MR side that was been described before, I certainly buy into 100%.
And, just to add one point, I think you're focusing very much on 2020 on the low sulfur trade, which I think a lot of people are taking their approach of that. But for sure, there's going to be a need, because there are not that many refineries that can make a low sulfur fuel for ships. So there's going to be a need of moving large box of this low sulfur fuel from the refineries to the places of consumption. So I think probably that should be moving and certainly giving a big benefit on the ton-mile demand. This would be one of the added effects of the low sulfur regulation coming in.
Great. And switching gears a little bit, I know the big news recently is with the Scorpio acquisition going to, now there are 105 vessels. I'll turn this over to Kim and Marco, but how do you guys feel? Is scale important in the product tanker sector right now?
Yes, it is, and has always been, and will continue to be. Marco was saying before that it's the biggest fleet out there, it's 1,500 ships, and if that would have been 1,500 different owners, it would not have been good, which is an exaggeration, of course, but consolidation is good, and we're glad to see it happening, and it is important. That's the short answer, so to speak. Then you can always, I love these philosophical kind of, inputs every now and then that, It should not be too many, though. It shouldn't be, if 1,500 ships, it should not be one hand having 500 ships, because he would have 50 ships spot every day, and he would just be a market taker rather than a market maker. And so there is a lid, there is a limit there, of course, but we're not there, and we're not there in a long way. So it's good. And if you were to ask if there's more consolidation coming up, I'm sure there will be, and there is room for it. And in a way, we've done our little part in being part of the Stena Group, who in two steps have taken over this Stena Veco company, and so we've gone from 15 ships to 65 ships in that organic pooling, so to speak. So it's good, and we're happy that it's continuing.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree. And I think that's interesting that this starting of consolidation is happening on the bigger size ships, probably because there is less of them. And so the moment you start consolidating one owner who controls 50, 60 ships on a fleet of 300 ships, you feed it much more than 50, 60 ships in a fleet of 1,500. So I think it's a good process. We've always discussed about it. And I also agree that too few owners at the end of the day would not be good, but also for themselves, because at the end of the day, they are making, they are competing with themselves. But I think a little bit of consolidation would be very positive. Naturally, as we always said, consolidation has not to be with one guy owning all the ships. Consolidation can be done through pooling, can be done through time chartering in ships of other owners. So there's many ways to see consolidation. But for sure, I think that this will continue in the future.
So I know, Eddie, I mentioned that currently asset values are a little depressed, and especially on the secondhand tonnage side, values seem very attractive. So do you think, consolidation moving forward will be motivated more by asset values, or will it be a combination of asset values and an uptick in the market, or just general sentiment on rates improving? Eddie, if you want to chime in on that.
Probably a combination of both, James.
All right, so I guess following up on that, which segment of the product tanker sector do you see as the most attractive right now? Is it in the handy sizes, the MRs, or the larger LRs?
Well, as they said, Valentis, I've already stated my thesis. We're focusing on the MR sector. We consider that this is the value and the opportunity going forward.
Margaret, do you have any thoughts?
No, I agree with him. I think the safest bet is in the MRs. Then I think everything else is tied to that. But for sure, I would say that today still the MR is the, we have mostly MRs in our fleet. We have some handies. We have the LR ones who will be coming, but so we feel very comfortable in the MRs. They have proven over and over and over to be the most flexible ship, you know. And it's also good that also, you know, we're talking about 20 years later on. These ships have also a very good second life, you know, with vegetable oils, with other products that is not CPP. So I think it's also a ship that you can move from one segment of the market to another. So I think it's a very flexible ship. It's a very, 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 very successful size, I must say, in general.
All right. So, you know, going over to what's going on right now in the crude sector, OPEC, they announced they're going to extend the production cuts to 2018. So how do you view this pertain to the product tanker sector? Do you see possible ton-mile expansion due to these cuts or, you know, certain trades increasing, you know, imports to Latin America and Africa? Kim, if you could share some thoughts.
Yeah, sure. First of all, I think the OPEC cuts are good. They are necessary. Surgery we need to do. We need to get rid of the overhang. We did not get rid of the overhang. Well, the inventories didn't even start to go down in Q1, which was surprising. But I guess the OPEC countries were referring to their production cut, and they did production cut, but they started to sell from their from their own tanks. So we didn't see inventories in the commercial side of the world go down dramatically in Q1, but now we've seen it started anyways, which is good. So and parts of the cuts will be replaced exports from primarily from the Middle East Gulf, which is certainly good for us too in this period when other things are looking a little challenging. It's good that they did the cut to get rid of the inventories and new trades. I certainly see, you know, I mean, West Africa, South America, Latin America are certainly growing big time on consumption of products, they have not been very successful in building refineries at the same degree or at the same pace. You know, they've been certainly refinery. New builds talks in Angola that's been delayed or cancelled in Nigeria and Venezuela and Brazil and they're not coming up, so they need more products, that's for sure, and that is now likely to come from the Middle East or India, so that's also supporting the argument of ton mile expansion, as a matter of fact, and this is going to be prompted big time here now during the next few quarters, this and going forward into the future, this long new haul of products going into these areas, West Africa, South America, Latin America, for instance.
If I may comment, Eddie Valentis here from Pyxis. I mean, definitely, you know, it will have an effect, maybe a slight effect on for crude tankers. But this effect might be counterbalanced by increases in production in Libya, which is already happening, and the increase in production of U.S. shale oil production. So this might counterbalance whatever losses might be there for the crude sector. Regarding the product tankers, One effect that, besides what Kim has mentioned, one effect that we might see, we all predict oil prices to increase in the second half. So we think that higher crude prices will likely affect refinery margins also and runs, especially in Europe and Asia. And this will lead to possible imports into these regions, to this region, either from the Middle East or from the U.S. So it's a positive sign, as it's a positive development, as also Kim mentioned. And regarding the expansion, I fully agree with Kim. Latin America, Africa are there is no refinery expansion. Therefore, this will be major areas of demand going forward.
Fiori, I would tend to agree with both with Kim and Eddie on this point, especially because I think we read a lot of analysis on tankers. I think the dynamics are a little bit different between products and crude. I think what's not good for crude, not necessarily, is not good for clean. I think there is new routes getting developed. And I think if there is less production and less transportation of crude, you'll see more and more places will have to get their products from somewhere else. So I think we'll have a positive impact on, but could have a positive impact on the product tanker trade.
Hey, thanks, guys. And I guess we'll move into our final topic, which is shipyard capacity. SPP closed earlier this year, and you know, it seemed like there could have been some constraints in the South Korean shipyards, but recently there's been a lot of news of aggressive marketing and pricing tactics by the South Korean yards to win, you know, some larger VLCC and VLGC orders. Do you believe these yards will start to employ the similar tactics for product tankers? And I'll turn this over to the panel, whoever wants to start.
Okay, I can start. No, I don't. I don't see them doing the same things on the product side as they seem to be doing on the VLCCs lately. These prices are already low, you know. It's whatever, $32-33 million, and depending on the sophistication. But you know, the top was 60, and I cannot see, you know, all of a sudden you see D'Amico ordering ships at $28 million in Korea, I have to say. So I think we're at the bottom on all of those prices. It won't go any further down. I'm more concerned about actually that Korea is starting to offer good prices, these prices for a prolonged time, and that actually some of these Korean yards will be back in force. Some of them have been cut off and shut down and mothballed and things like that. But I'm concerned that the governments and banks in Korea will start to help these yards again, and that the Korean yards could start to build in a bigger fashion that they are doing now. It's so good to have this low order book, and we'd like to have it this low. So I'm not afraid of Chinese new building sectors on the product tanker side, but certainly it could be a revival of some of the yards in Korea, and that would be not be good. But I don't see the prices coming down.
Yeah, I
This is Marco. Look, I think one of the good things also product tankers, which people, we know, we don't stress enough, is that at the end of the day, it is a very, there are some strong barriers to enter the product tanker market. And one of these barriers, it is the fact that there are not that many shipyards that can build these ships. Mainly have been the Koreans in the past. There's only one shipyard in China, and a bunch of shipyards in Japan, which don't have big output. A bunch, when I say three, four, probably in Japan. Now, the fact is that China, we have seen it now also during the dry cargo crisis, owners who wanted to sell a Japanese-built dry cargo ship have sold it much easier, has been sold much easier than a Chinese-built ship. So there is a kind of the other side of the coin, but the fact you pay them cheaper in China, but then they also sell them much cheaper, and they are not the first asset that people will buy. So I think competition from China on clean tankers, I think I see it kind of removed. I agree with Kim that I'm a little bit concerned about the fact that in Korea they're starting to talk about supporting the shipping industry. But then on the other hand, I think it will take some time. And I know for a fact that a lot of yachts that are under kind of financial supervision, they've not been able to offer stupid prices that has happened in the past. So this has been a positive effect. That's why the order book has not been running here. So I think China for sure will not be a big effect. I see very few owners of a certain type of fleet that will be building in China, and I think that Korea will still have some ups and downs and some hiccups, and for sure Japan is not going to be a swinging factor in this matter. So if you look at it, if you take a little bit of more of a helicopter view of the whole problem, I think for a while we'll see limited output of product tanks, especially in the smaller segments. And also during this crisis, during these years, we have not seen stupid prices. We have not seen the 28, 27 million. I think something below 30 was already a very good price, and things have bounced back very quickly back to the 32, 33 million, which I think is where is the cost of these ships. So I think we should not see any kind of race towards very cheap ships.
This is Eddie Valentis from Pixis. I fully agree with that. Kim and Marco, I just want to add that, what we've seen, especially in Korea, the few, very few orders that have been placed, these are for older, let's say, design vessels. These are the Tier 2 so-called vessels. And these are the last vessels that these shipyards were offering. Now they're moving to the more upgraded vessel types for MRs, the Tier 3 so-called vessels. And these are more expensive than 32, 33. I'm led to believe now that there are, some shipyards are quoting even 34, 34 and a half. So I'm definitely agree with what Kim and Marco said before.
And I would like also to add on that I think the Tier 2 is still a far superior ship than a Tier 3. I think the people who have been taking the last Tier 2 ships have been doing a very good deal. They're cheaper ships. They have better speed and consumption. So I think this was a much better ship than what they're planning to do on Tier 3.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. So I guess right now we'll turn it over to some questions. And this will be for the panel, so anybody could jump in. First question is, given the low order book and the greatly reduced shipyard capacity, do you believe the impending upcycle in the product tankers is likely to last beyond the normal 2 years?
Kim from Concordia here. Yes, I do, actually. I see this low order book. We're talking about low order book, and it is there's still a few ships that are coming, but we're talking about a growth of under 2% over the next couple of years, and it's not being filled, and it's good. And some of these shipyards that I was concerned about are not there to deliver yet. So it's looking really good from that perspective, and the underlying demand for oil in general is good. We know that. We have that with us. It's a given. We almost take it as a given. We just build too many ships every now and then. But the underlying demand for oil is good, and for products it varies from whatever, 2 to 3% to 10% in a good year. The demand for products because of the arbitrages and the cross trades and things like that. So things are looking good, and I think it will be slightly more sustainable going forward. Not so easy to get access to bank financing and things like that. So So, yeah, I think we have a good story ahead of us.
Yeah, I fully agree. Eddie Valente is here from Pixis. I fully agree. Considering, you know, the projections for the refined product demand going forward for the next couple of years, it's in the region of 3%. And considering what Kim said about the growth of the fleet of 2% annually, then you can do your own calculations and see where we are. And plus, the possibility, and this is a high possibility, of scrapping taking place in the near future because of older units, especially the 20-year-plus units, which, as I mentioned earlier, are 13% of the MR fleet, which will decide not to go through the ballast water treatment installation. So we believe the scenario going forward is very, very good.
Look, I would tend to agree. The only thing I'm sure about is looking at the past. I think this is one of the few times in these markets, and I've been here for, I don't know, 20 years, in which you see a low cycle and there is not on the horizon a tsunami of new buildings coming forward. So I think this is very encouraging. You know, normally you tend to see associated to these moments of low cycle large new building orders, and we're not seeing it so far. And I don't think that there are the conditions for seeing it. So I think it's very encouraging.
Okay, so what are some signals that you look to say that the market has, you know, reached an upturn? So specifically, what are some of the leading indicators that you guys look for?
This Marco, I think one of the first things is the interest you start seeing from big charterers for time charter business. Normally, this is one. I think that normally the market starts moving on the spot, and then you see it moving to the TCs, and then you have an impact on the new on the prices of the ships. I think when you start seeing showing an interest in starting to put 2-3 STCs, I think that would be a very good signal on the market. And I must say that there is more interest now than there was a couple of months ago. So we start seeing that there is people who are starting to look around for ships for a longer period of time, which is kind of encouraging.
I agree with Marco. This is Eddie Valentis from Pixis. We also see increased interest for time charters from major charters for 2-3 years. In addition to that, asset values have moved in the past couple of months. We have seen an increase in asset values of approximately 10%. So this is an indicator that there is increased interest in the market for the product sector. And usually these are signs that indicate that the future will be better.
Yeah, and Kim here just to add on the TCE part, which is absolutely correct. And who is taking it? It's typically the traders now and some of the trading-orientated oil companies. And they normally have, you know, a good sniff for what's about to come. So that's a good sign. Other signs that I'm following exceptionally close, and I've been, you know, following it so closely, and been repeating it all the time, is the inventories. I'm looking at the inventories every week and watching it go down. And we saw a big draw last week, and it's expected a big draw this week too. So we're on the right track there. And then, of course, every day, open up a new market report and see no new orders. I'm as happy as it can be.
Okay, so our next question is on, I guess, the sale and leaseback financial instrument. We've seen quite a few sale and leasebacks on the price anchor side. Marco, your firm was involved in one. Is this something that can replace bank lending, or is this just merely a band-aid? And that's not something that's going to bring back undisciplined ordering in the future.
Look, I think we did quite a few of these transactions in two different segments. We did some older ships, 2006, 2007, some 10-year plus. And I think that has been to find a substitute for a straight sale on the market, which was not there for lack of liquidity at the levels we're asking. Then we did a more modern ship. And in that case, we're trying to find something where We have purchase options after years 3 and 4, so we see it as a way of providing cash flow at a reasonable level with an asset that probably potentially can be, not can be, in our view should be an appreciating value, and we can repurchase it at a very attractive level and bring it back in the fleet. So I think there is two ways of looking at this. Older ships, for getting rid of them without having liquidity in the, S&P market, in the traditional S&P market. More modern ships is to do it in order to generate cash flow with a possibility, and actually I think a very strong possibility of repurchasing those assets at a good value. And at the end of the day, if you do it with the right parties, rates are not horrible, and we come back with TC equivalents in the 14,000 range, which is still within where we think the market will be trading. So we're not doing it and ending up with a TC of $17,000-$18,000 a day. I think we still have, our goal is still to keep a lower break even on the fleet, and this is another way also of generating cash while still keeping an acceptable break even level.
Yeah, and Kim Ullman here. We also were involved in numerous of those sale aspects last year. I'm not saying that it's replacing the conventional funding or bank financing in any ways, but it is, as Mark is saying, it's a good way to bridge a bad market, and that's really what it is. And it has different flavors on it with the repurchasing and the purchase options and things like that. And if you have a good name and you can come up with low cost of capital, as a matter of fact, so it has a lot of pros in it. But you don't do only that. You know, we and many others did similar simultaneously. A refinancing, conventional refinancing with a group of relationship banks that we have had for a long time. That we are fortunate enough to have, so to speak, and that's of course we do in combination with the sale leasebacks.
And with the sale leaseback structure, I think the rules are changing in 18 or 19, where they will now be on balance sheet transactions. Would that change how you guys approach sale leasebacks in the future?
I think on a strictly accounting approach, I think that where you have a purchase obligation doesn't go on your balance sheet because it's seen as financing. So where you have a purchase obligation, where you don't have a purchase obligation, will go on your balance sheet. But also we're talking about going on your balance sheet, also things like long-term time charters. So I think there's going to be an impact on all of our balance sheets from all these changing regulations. Because when you have to start putting, a Japanese chartered ship for 7 years with some purchase options, and you have to start putting a debt on your balance sheet, I think that starts being a little bit of a different ball game. So for sure, there's going to be a swelling of all balance sheets of shipping companies. This, I think, is going to be inevitable.
Yeah, nothing really to add there either. We have a combination of purchase obligations and purchase options on our sale leasebacks, and the obligations are on the balance sheets, and the ones with the options will be in 2019, and we'll have to take a look at that, how that will affect our view on it. But I'm sure we'll continue to. We're not necessarily doing it to get it off the balance sheet. We have purchase options and good purchase options, and we are very likely, and we are going to exercise these purchase options, so they're going to be back on the books anyways.
Yeah, I would like to add that I totally agree on this. Often these transactions are not made to get assets off your balance sheet. I think that's the last of the problems. I think often these transactions are made, A, to generate cash flow, B, to get an attractive rate of financing for a higher leverage. But the fact of getting it off your balance sheet, I think, is probably the last thing that comes in everybody's mind, I think.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, that was my analyst hat. Just trying to see how it's going to affect my models moving forward. So if we could switch gears a little bit and kind of talk about the U.S. crude production growth and exports. So Euronav successfully tested the VLCC into Corpus Christi, and also the Trump administration is looking to reduce the strategic oil reserves by 50%, and there's other export terminal developments in the Gulf area. So, you know, if you guys can give some comments on what you think these developments, especially with U.S. crude exports, are going to have on the product tanker sector.
If I may start, this is Eddie Valentis from Pyxis Tankers. Last week, I was in Houston for a major industry event. And by the way, I visited a few clients, oil majors, and I was impressed by the amount. You know, it's different reading about it rather than meeting and, you know, having a clear understanding of what's going on and the amount of investment that is happening in shale oil. So, yes, U.S. will be a major exporter, both in crude and products. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, the amount of growth in product, in refined product exports for the from the past years from the U.S. is amazing. We're very much looking forward for these exports to be also on bigger ton-mile routes as well. So far, the majority is heading towards Latin America and Africa, but we're very much looking forward for these routes to be expanded.
Kim, Marco, do you guys have any additional thoughts?
Just to say that, you know, this crude that gets exported to other refineries, and then when the products come out of the refinery, they have to be moved somewhere else. So at the end of the day, you're just shifting the issue from one country to another. But I think the generation of ton mile is still very positive from all of this.
Yeah, honestly speaking, I haven't really got around it yet to have a proper analysis and in conclusion out of it. It goes to a refinery, and that refinery could be for domestic consumption at that country, so it could be bad from that point of view. But somehow, somewhere, it is more oil on the water. It is typically tankers for you. You know, all of a sudden you have crude oil going from America to China, wherever, and it starts and it creates new trades and opens up new trade lanes for crude tankers, and in turn that will have an impact on the product tankers as well. So generally speaking, I think it's good. It's typically tankers. It's one of the reasons why this market is so interesting. It's not stuck in a rut forever. It changes all the time. And generally speaking, more oil exports, crude and products is good. But the final conclusion, I have to say, it's a little bit early yet to determine.
Okay. So if you guys could share some thoughts on, I guess, demand growth for refined products and ton-mile demand growth. Do you see ton-mile demand growth outpacing the overall global demand growth for refined products, or do you think that, you know, ton-mile demand and refined product demand are going to be pretty much similar to each other?
Yeah,
all of this is always tied to unforeseen events. I think the fact of 2020 of the low sulfur, that could have some unforeseen today impact. The fact that you'll have to move low sulfur fuel from the few refineries that make it to the whole world, I think that could be a new factor. So I think that in general, I think ton mile, the fact that you still have refineries being built that are far away, closing your refineries, I think ton mile still could be outstripping the general growth of demand, you know. So I think that could be a positive factor. And I think that the ton mile growth in the past has been the one supporting the industry very much.
Yeah, Kim here. Yeah, definitely. Oil consumption is defined as having an increase or growth rate of 1.5% per year. And we have had that. I said it before that we've been in a lucky situation where we've had growth ever since, whatever we look back, 1995, 98, whatever. It's been growing by anything from 0.5% to 1.5% ever since, and still expected to do. That's 1.5 million barrels per day. That's what we consume every day in our daily works. And on top of that comes the ton mile, obviously. And you've heard these stories about the refineries, and now Mark have been mentioning it, and the new situation, and all of that. And together with the arbitrages, yes, the ton mile addition to the oil consumption, 1.5%, is definitely surpassing that oil consumption growth. So the two together is anything, that's why I say anything from 3% to 10% in the product tanker overall transportation demand factor.
You know, that's a powerful number, you know, the big number. I agree with Kim.
All right, so moving on to our next question. With the global push for, you know, less greenhouse gas emissions and, you know, a lot of switching to electric trains and trucks and automobiles, especially in Europe, what do you see demand looking like long term for refined products, especially in Europe, China, and India?
Can you repeat the question?
So with pushed for more for less greenhouse gas emissions and a switch to more electric transportation, trucks, trains, and cars in Europe, and also China and India, do you see lower total demand for refined products long-term into those regions?
Well, look, I think it's kind of on the news in these days. The projected reluctancy of the United States of joining the Paris Accord, I think it was based on the fact that they have much smaller growth compared to other developing economies. So there was a favorite treatment of a developing economy compared to mature economies. So I think if we look at that, we're accepting the fact that developing economies for a long time, they will be still growing at a certain level, at a higher level than mature economies. And then also said that, I think we're moving to new mixes of fuels, cleaner fuels. Probably there'll be more gasoline consumption and less diesel. But at the end of the day, we're still very much a fossil fuel dependent society. And I see that continuing for a while with switches, changes, more efficiencies. But I think that that will be a fossil fuel dependent society for a long while.
This Eddie Valentis from Pixis, I fully agree. And to add to that, I mean, considering that energy demand up to 2040 will be approximately up about 30%, and considering that the amount of cars will double in the next 10 years, so which amount of that will go to electric cars and which will be gasoline? In any case, you know, supposing they are all electric, this is the beauty of the product tanker. It's so versatile. It has so many alternatives. And, you know, maybe start decreasing, but distillates will start increasing. So we have the alternative cargoes. And, it's a good thing going forward, but needs for energy are always going to be there, at least for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, absolutely, Kim here, we're certainly supporting everything that goes into electric and and do everything we can to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But there is certainly a trend that the electric cars will increase big times over the next 10, 15 years. However, with that will also be the conventional cars as we see it right now, or the experts, even if I realize that some of these figures have come out that even if electric cars goes to 20 million in 2030 or 2035, it's still only 5 or 6% of the total vehicle fleet at that time. I realize that that's BP coming up with these figures, and there might be a little bias and things like that, but there's certainly a long way until there will be a big cut in transportation needs for gasoline, in my view.
You know, we see all these numbers in percentage, and in percentage they look fantastic. But then in absolute term, it's like saying, you know, consumption of gasoline will be going down, will be substituted by electric cars. But then if you triple the number of cars, you know, that what you lose on one side, you make for it on the other side. I think these are the powerful numbers. I think the growth of what the world is experiencing and will experience. There's so many people who are starting still to come to benefit about a lot of the advances of progress has been so far. So I think there is still a big growth factor there. I think sure there'll be enough room for everybody.
All right. Well, I guess we're just about out of time. So I just want to thank our panelists again for joining us on this webinar. And I'll turn it over to Nick for closing comments. Nick?
Well, thank you. All I would like to say is a big thank you to all four of you. I think it was a great panel with very interesting topics to cover. And again, thank you very much. I would like to mention that we are going to have an audio archive available in a couple of hours from now. So anyone who would like to come back and listen to the webinar, you're very welcome to do so at www.capitallinkwebinars.com. We will also prepare a transcript which will be available at no cost to those who are interested, and we will notify you when we have it ready. Again, thank you for this great panel discussion, and we can all disconnect. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Nicholas. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Ed. This is Mark. It's always a pleasure, and it's always great discussing with people who know about the industry. It's always a great industry to be discussing about. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. Thank Same you. Here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And with many thanks to our presenters today, that does conclude the webcast. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect.